Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For all the hoopla, noisy debates, and even Mike Huckabee's funky bass guitar, there's been one gaping silence in the final push to the primaries in Campaign 08. America's late-night comedy writers have been on strike for 2 months and counting. The candidates have gripped and grinned, emoted and attacked, all without comment from the normally high-voltage peanut gallery of American politics. This hour On Point, we'll talk with striking comedy writers from The Colbert Report and The Daily Show on the eve of the nation's first primary in New Hampshire about politics without their laughs. It is a tough, serious strike out there, but the campaign has gone on. In a moment, our riders will join us, but first we go to New Hampshire, where the hours are ticking down now to the first primary vote. Richard Wolff is senior White House correspondent for Newsweek magazine. He's out on the hustings. Exactly where are you, Richard Wolff?
We are en route to Lebanon, New Hampshire, and the reception here may be a little patchy, but I'm with you right now, and we've just done our first event, heading to our second with Barack Obama.
With Barack Obama, tell us first, what do you see in these poll numbers? We just heard at the top of the hour a big lead opening up for Obama maybe, but other tracking polls say touch and go. How do you read it?
Well, certainly this last round of polls has put it into a double-digit lead for Obama. As you say, other polls have been much tighter. And listen, the Clinton folks were so confident about it being a tight race that they issued a memo barely 24 hours coming out of final polls emerged. And they said, where's the
We're having a little trouble with your line there, but tell us, I mean, we've heard reports of these rhapsodic greetings for Obama around New Hampshire. Have you seen that? Does that ring true to what you've seen, Richard? Oh, and we're in the ozone of cell phone land. Looks like we've lost our reporter on the ground in New Hampshire, but we'll pay much more attention there to New Hampshire and all the rest. We've got plenty with us this hour, though, writers from right across the spectrum of the, well, the two hottest shows in late-night comedy, you might say. Though they have not been on the air, they will be tonight. Let's go first, though, to those who snuck back on last week, David Letterman and Jay Leno. On Friday, after the Iowa caucuses, David Letterman featured his top 10 reasons you know your presidential campaign is in trouble.
Number five, when reporting caucus results, media refers to you as other. Number four, a meet the press appearance turns ugly when you put Tim Russert in a headlock. Number three, budget director blew most of your campaign funds betting on the Knicks. Yeah. Number two, you've primarily been campaigning in Canada.
I don't know that.
And the number one sign your presidential campaign is in trouble, you often ask, what would George W. Bush do?
Bada bing, bada boom. Letterman was back with his own deal with striking writers, no longer striking in his case. Jay Leno doing it on his own. He led off his show on Friday congratulating the two winners in Iowa, Democrat Barack Obama and Republican Mike Huckabee. Leno starts with his take on Obama's victory.
Welcome to the Tonight Show. Well, congratulations to Barack Obama, the big winner of the Democratic caucus in Iowa. Pretty amazing. Stunning victory. Got 57% of the youth vote. And he got 100% of Iowa's black vote, a guy named Larry. So that is... And congratulations to Mike Huckabee. He was a big winner on the Republican side. He won as well. Yeah. I tell you, Mike Huckabee won. Isn't that amazing? The impact just one appearance on the Tonight Show can have. See that? Tuesday he was unknown. Boom! The next day.
There it is, the sound, maybe not the full stuff, of the Jay Leno Show. We have writers with us today, and we're delighted to have them, striking writers, because this strike is not over. From The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and from The Colbert Report, let me introduce them. Laura Kraft joins us from New York. She's been a writer for Comedy Central's The Colbert Report since it was launched in October 2005. Laura Kraft, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Glenn Eichler is also a writer for The Colbert Report and joins us as well from New York. Glenn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, a writer there for the last 4 years, also on strike, Tim Carvel. Tim, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First of all, full acknowledgement. You guys are on strike, and it cannot be fun. Never mind watching jokes go on without you in the saddle. But just the day in and day out, it looks cold and tough out there, Lord. This does not look, this has gone on a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long 2 months, and hopefully it won't go on much longer, but who knows. It does kind of make you wish that we taped on the West Coast, where it seems at least it's sunny.
Right. You don't have to stand with your shoes in the freezing snow. Tim, Glenn, what's it been like? Did you think it would go? Here we are, 2 months and counting into week 10 now. Did you think when this started out it would go this long, Glenn?
We hoped that it wouldn't, but we had a pretty good idea that it would. It seems to have been going according to a script written by the producers. But, you know, we would love to be back at work as soon as possible.
And, Tim, what is it like to watch the campaign go on without everything that you all do normally every night there so effectively? I mean, do you sit around finding yourself, you know, want to throw your spitballs and deliver your jibes? Or have you just turned away and, I don't know, watch the sunset?
There's a campaign still going on?
Who cares? I'm not making jokes about it.
Honestly, I feel like I haven't really watched it all that closely for the first month or so of the strike. It just felt a little too much like driving past the house of the girl who broke up with you. It was a little too painful to turn on the TV and watch it all go by. And when you did turn on the TV, generally something would happen that made you think, I wish I were back at the office. I wish I were back, indoors. I happened to turn on CNN one afternoon and just saw somebody throwing back to the Situation Room and just said, we now go back to New York with my homeboy, Wolf Blitzer. And I turned off the set. I'm like, I can't bear to watch this knowing that.
And there was the lovely Giuliani stuff at the beginning of the strike. Yeah. It was pretty great.
Remind us,
for a while there, it did seem like they were trying to torture us.
You mean just when he was out there, the stories about how he had fobbed off security costs for his mistress when he was married?
Well, that isn't. I think that's a little bit more recent. The stuff about.
I think that happened right after we went out. The trip to the Hamptons.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. That would be a big juicy target,
and
you're right. And you didn't get to lay a hand on it. Is it frustrating,
no.
Laura?
It really is frustrating. It's a. There's been. It's such a lovely campaign right now.
Yeah,
it is actually a really great.
It's wide open on both sides.
A lovely election, yeah.
And we can't say anything about it.
Well, what does that mean to a Colbert report writer to have a lovely campaign? Lovely, full of juicy targets, or just plain lovely
democracy?
Yeah,
so much
democracy?
Nice juiciness. It's like anything else. It's like I always think of politics sort of as just gossip, and it's sort of like there's always been a great party the night before, and you want to dish about it. With your friends, and you can't because you're on strike.
Laura,
you
know, Glenn, Tim,
did you hear what that person said?
Yeah. And
also, when Laura goes to a party, it's usually reported in the New York Times the next day.
Complete with
very, very fancy.
Yeah, fancy, lots of champagne glasses.
Absolutely.
Your guys, Jon Stewart and Mr. Colbert, will be back on the air tonight. Can you imagine what that's going to be like without your genius behind them?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think that they've got a whole lot of genius in front of them themselves. I mean, I can't imagine what the shows will look like. We wish we were there. I know that they wish we were there, but it'll be both fascinating and sad and weird to turn on the TV and watch the show, without having been there that day.
Laura, does it feel like a betrayal for the Colbert Report to be back on the air without you guys riding behind it?
Absolutely not. They wish that we were there as much as we wish that we were there. And they've been very good to us and have tried very hard to get us back. And it's basically no one is happy about this situation. This goes on a bigger level up to Viacom. This has nothing to do with the hosts. And they're trying their best. They really are. And it's not a betrayal. It's just sort of, just sort of sad. It's nothing but sad.
Yeah. Okay, Glenn, here's the deal. It's been the two most critical months on the home stretch to these votes, Iowa, New Hampshire. You guys haven't been there. Would everything be different if you were?
I doubt it would be different, but it would be even more entertaining than it is now, although it's pretty entertaining right now.
I mean, do you look at anybody and say, well, Huckabee, we would have had our way with him, and he would have been, you know, in a ditch somewhere, or Obama, we would have.
What do you think we do?
I don't know. All I know is people talk about what you do. They never stop laughing about it. I mean, would you have had that Obama, you know, clipped his wings? I can just imagine skits, you know, he's walking on water and Hillary's floundering in the shallow. I don't know. What would you have done with this field?
Well, we didn't know that Obama had wings until last week, so we might be working on his wings right now.
Right.
I saw there was a great picture in the New York Times at a Hillary Clinton rally where Chelsea happened to be looking at the camera wide-eyed as if, you know, she were Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street. And we would have done something with that, but, you know, maybe they will anyway. I don't know.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking on the eve of the New Hampshire primary with striking writers from The Daily Show and Colbert Report about American politics without their laughs. Laura Kraft and Glenn Eichler, striking writers with Comedy Central's The Colbert Report. Tim Carvel is a writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, also out on strike. That's no fun, and it's stretching out now into its 10th week. Things have begun to change. Their two shows will be back on the air tonight, but without their writing behind them. Of course, Jay Leno and David Letterman back last week. Let's listen for just a minute. I want to get you the critique from the pros who are with us here. Here's Jay Leno on Friday joking about two candidates who suffered in Iowa, Hillary Clinton and Mitt Romney. Leno first goes after Clinton.
You know, I was watching MSNBC and all the pundits, and one of Hillary Clinton's campaign people said that last night's defeat was just a bump in the road. A bump in the road. Kind of like the scene in the Titanic where the guy goes, what was that? Oh, just an iceberg. And Mitt Romney, although he spent $15 million, came in second. You know, I kind of understand why he came in second. Not the most dynamic speaker. Did you see him today in New Hampshire talking with people at a diner or a restaurant? Listen to, not the, here.
Mitt is an unusual name, isn't it?
I think it's not your first name. So.
No, it's not my legal first name. It's my middle name. My first name is Willard, and I was called Billy in kindergarten. Maybe those of you who are a little older might remember the song, Where Have You Been, Billy Boy, Billy Boy? And the girls would sing this song to me, and I did not like that. So I came home one day and said, Mom, I don't want to be called Billy anymore.
There's Leno. Tom Shales with The Washington Post. When the shows finally came back on the air, said the long national nightmare is over. Of course, it's not over for striking writers. Laura, Glenn, Tim, what did you think of these two guys? You know, of course, David has his writers. Jay doesn't. Can you tell from what we heard right there? Tim, Glenn, Laura?
They sound exactly the way they always sound to me. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Does it matter in the short run, or is it only in the long run where, you know, the comics can't really keep it up night after night without the big staff behind them?
It will really start to become a drag for them because, you know, it's a pretty debilitating schedule even when you have your writers. So it's going to get more and more difficult. Well, not for Dave, but for Jay, certainly.
Laura, how about you? Do you hear it there? I mean, can Jay Leno do this for how long without his gang behind him?
Oh, wow. I mean, I have no idea. But, you know, the thing is also they're both – Jay's a really – he's a really funny stand-up. He's a really funny guy. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the answer would be to that. Who knows?
Well, they all, you know, they besides doing their political stuff, they also have their remote stuff like jaywalking and when Dave sends a camera out. So, you know, that eats up, 10 minutes a night for those guys that they'll now have to figure out what to do with, or Jay will anyway.
It's a lot more audience questions. I think the basic thing is we can all anticipate as a nation a lot of audience interaction.
Right. I mean, the thing that many people, particularly young television viewers, will told have come to depend on the comedy shows for is bursting bubbles of pretense and you know, sort of the BS that sometimes gets floated right out front. You all and your front men have been very good at going after that. I wonder what you see in this current slate of candidates at this point in the campaign. I mean, what looks juicy to you? If you were, you know, pitching jokes to Jon Stewart or to Colbert, you know, where would you be pointing your guns right now? Big ones or small ones? Laura, Glenn?
Well, I think we would probably be talking about Hillary's apparent growing desperation and the idea that Obama kind of stole their campaign of change.
Yeah, in
out
her concession speech,
yeah.
Or whatever that, you know, her
after
speech
after Iowa,
in Iowa
last week, yeah.
She was talking about, she totally jumped on the change train from the Experience Express.
And I think we would probably be talking about some of Huckabee's less known but pretty breathtaking statements and things that he did as governor.
Yeah.
Right. He is an absolutely charming individual who just happens to have believed and still believe that it was a good idea to lock up AIDS patients. there is an odd disconnect between his warm and cuddly persona and some of the things he happens to believe.
There's also that weird all the dog stories, I think, is like the
Romney's pooch on the roof of the car
son.
And all that? Or,
oh,
or?
Yeah.
Well, Romney tied his dog on top of the car, the family car, but then
never get tired of that.
Son
hung a dog.
Hung a
and
dog
that,
at Boy Scout
gold.
Camp. At Boy Scout camp, yeah. Because the dog was not doing well, so he strangled the dog over a tree branch.
And Giuliani's wife used to demonstrate medical devices on dogs. There is an odd.
There is a weird little Republican link.
There is an odd.
I'm
dog
sure Fred Thompson has a dog story in there.
So a shaggy one.
A shaggy dog shaggy story.
So we've got a dog theme here. What about what about Obama? He's had these crowds which are just kind of over the top, really on fire. The charisma's clearly working, worked in Iowa like crazy.
Is
he untouchable? Is he untouchable to comedians who want to come after a guy with satire or not?
No, I think we would be looking at Michelle Obama a little bit because she has the unfortunate quality of like being honest, which is very bad in a
she
campaign.
She and Edward's wife also, like the two of them could go head to head and the tell it like it is.
Yeah.
We should have, like, tell it like
so
it
have
is
them listening to some form of their husbands and then delivering their own kind of tell it like it is commentary on
well,
the side.
They're both really, you know, they're both really, really yes, brilliant women. And it's just, it's funny to have them sort of be the Greek chorus of truth telling.
Yeah.
and I do think that, you know, to some extent we'd probably have some fun. I mean, we cover coverage almost more than we do the candidates. And mm-hmm. The breathless tone in which Obama has been covered by the press would probably be pretty fruitful for us. I mean,
second coming quality to it.
Yeah, yeah. And if they, you know, whenever you see a reporter, you know, that whenever they go out to a reporter who's at an Obama rally, they just seem, you know, thrilled to be there. You know, in a way that the reporter at the Clinton rally seems to be grimly doing a job. The one at the Obama rally always seems to be just a little too into it.
Walking on
He's also
sunshine.
The only candidate that's been photographed a lot in his bathing suit coming out of the surf.
No, that's not true. I don't know if you've seen the Romney pics.
Are there Romney pics too?
Frankly, the French cut is surprising to me. But
Speedo. Right. Laura, do you ever wonder if the country's better off without you guys having your great fun, you know, with the candidates? Do we get a respite here that lets us just go straight at it for a while, or does it matter?
I would hope that the way that our show is a satirical addendum to the news, mm-hmm. and if we're just pointing out things that have happened in the news, I don't think the country is. I think the country is, of course, worse off because we are so funny.
We're hilarious.
We're side splitting.
Laughter, good for the health. Yeah. You know.
I mean,
and,
I don't.
And entirely deserving of residuals for our digital content.
Yes,
exactly.
We know that's the issue. Yes. Now and forever.
But no, I think that the campaign will just continue as campaigns continue. I don't think that it's going to – I don't think that we hold much sway my point.
I think reports of our influence have been greatly exaggerated. I mean, if – the Daily Show, John's been there since 1999. And if we are a highly influential show, We've been doing a very bad job of it because I don't know if you've seen what's been going on for the last 8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing something wrong. If we, to the extent that we've influenced anything, we've been doing a really bad job.
Well, but
I think if nothing else, it just makes people read the paper.
Like yeah, to say, what was that about? Or to be ready to enjoy the joke when it comes.
Yeah.
I wonder, and yet people give you guys an awful lot of credit. We've got a lot of listeners who want to talk about it right now. Let me turn to some of them, if I may. First call from New Hampshire, where it's all going on this week. Billy's calling from Brookline, New Hampshire. Hi, Billy. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you.
Yeah.
I had a comment and then a question for the panel. First comment, I do actually think that the country is worse off for not having that type of political satire on the air. And then the question is, given though the Daily Show and Colbert Report patted themselves as being really entertainment, how do the panels feel about many newspapers and radios are able to keep their political satirists as a form of commentary on where they can make fun and poke and prod, but yet you can't because you more see yourselves as entertainment writers? But I really see the function of the show is truly as political commentary that the nation really needs, particularly a democracy.
What do we lose when we don't have it going on, Billy? You're in New Hampshire, so what's the downside?
Well, the downside is, I mean, I got a chance to go to a Democratic political rally and for all the candidates, and I was having a hoot with my wife. We were making fun, and I'd love to go to the Colbert Report and Daily Show and share that sort of humor with the nation because it's important to make fun of to keep perspective.
So there's a vote in New Hampshire, never mind the primaries, but bring back the writers and the full comedy hold here. Let's get one from Iowa where the train has just pulled out. Gary, in Davenport, Iowa, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was calling because I was reacting to a question you put earlier. I am in favor of comedy, enjoy political satire, absolutely. But to suggest that the lack of comedic entertainment may have had an impact, or the presence of it could have had an impact on the Iowa caucuses, but we're in a time of war, secret prisons, extraordinary rendition, torture.
Big stuff.
Suggest that that would have affected the outcome of the Iowa caucuses, as you did in the question earlier, seems to me demeaning and a little bit of a departure from reality. I do love those programs, and I hope the writers get back to work, in fact.
But you've got your own beat on things, and yet they do help kind of set an agenda or pull certain angles up or maybe tamp them down. Let's get a third-party view here. Joining us right now from Hoover, Alabama, is Scott Stantis. He's an editorial cartoonist for the Birmingham News. He's author of the nationally syndicated comic strip Prickly City. He does a weekly cartoon for USA Today. His next one comes out tomorrow. Scott, thanks a lot for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom.
So does it matter that these writers, Laura, Glenn, Tim, and the rest, are out of commission right now in the heat of political battle or not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's good and bad to what they do. The good, of course, is that they help define candidates. They expand the language. I mean, listen, I work in an industry, and I'm dead serious about this, where I can't use the word sucks in a comic strip. That sucks.
Because you're not cable, you're in a paper that anybody can read over the breakfast table.
Of course. Well, that's the thought, and that might explain why, you know, we're hemorrhaging readers. But the most important thing to do, as Laura points out, is that they make people think about the campaign, and they think they're not important. Recent surveys from the 2004 election show that a large number of people admitted that their only source of political news and political commentary was the late-night shows, which, you know, tells you that was probably twice that number because, you know, who the heck would admit that? But they are extremely important. Where it's galling for someone like me is for decades, editorial cartoonists were the one source of snarky political commentary. And now you've got, you know, we were the one kid on the side of the road saying,
right,
hey, the emperor has no clothes. Now you have, you know, a bunch of them saying, hey, that guy's not wearing a stitch. And doing it as well or you know, sometimes better.
But you probably really just heard our caller from Iowa saying, come on, in the face of the weighty kind of issues that this country faces at home and around the world, this is a sidebar. This is peanuts.
I don't buy that for a second. I'll tell you why. I mean, you compare the two leading Democratic candidates, for instance, and as much as I admire Senator Obama, and I really do, I think he's a tremendous, charismatic candidate, but you put those two people side, him and Senator Clinton, side by side, you know, it's really who has the experience and so on. I'm a Republican. By the way, you guys, you writers, right on. It's, I'm go get them. No, it's true. You're right on this one. And my dad was actually management for years. I'm one of those, you know, knuckle-dragging conservatives you've heard about. But, you know, this one you guys are absolutely correct on.
In what respect, Scott?
Because the structure of the business has always been that the writers get a piece of the product.
Hang in there for those residual rights for whatever goes on the web?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's already web content or content being created exclusively for the web. And the producers are a bunch of, you know, thieving, lying crooks who are trying to take advantage of the truly creative people, like writers or cartoonists.
There's solidarity from the conservative side of the ledger. Let's get a call from Pratt in Boston. Hi, Pratt. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I teach college in Boston, and I am daily... I have a comment, and then maybe the writers can respond.
Yeah.
I'm stunned on a daily basis by the fact that voters and my students have access to more substantively important information about the candidates and the issues than any civilization has in human history.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when people interview voters, they're saying they're making their decisions based on a candidate's likability, you know, what he does with or without his dog, you know, how he looks on the campaign trail. They've looked into his eyes and he's looked trustworthy, or, you know, Hillary is laughing too much. And I'm stunned that people are making decisions on those criteria rather than trying to do a little background research, which is very easy for anybody to get. And I was wondering if the writers feel that they can somehow elevate the level of voters' interests or can educate voters about candidates' real actions in a way that possibly will improve the process.
Oh, boy. Tim, is it your job to lift the substantive quality of people's understanding of the candidates, or are you part of the reason that they're thinking about likability and where the dog sleeps?
God, I hope it's not part of my job, because if so, I've done a terrible
job. You screwed up.
You know, I feel like to some extent what you're hearing, why you're hearing about the likability and the dog stuff is just that it's a very long campaign. And at the outset, it might have been about the issues, but at this point, people know the issues well enough. I mean, it's a long running, you know, it's a long running telenovela at this point, and they have to keep just throwing new stuff out there because, you know, just to keep people interested and engaged. I mean, yeah, I do think that, you know, a lot of it is superficial, but you know, to some extent. I don't think that we set an agenda at all. I think that we follow the coverage that's out there. I mean, you know, we're not reporters. We're not political scientists. We're a bunch of people with a TiVo and a Nexus subscription, basically, you know, camping out on top of what the mainstream media is reporting.
Laura, your guy, Stephen Colbert, and Jon Stewart have both gone after the mainstream media for not doing a good job at different points. So, I don't know.
I was going to say... I think oftentimes do poke fun at the fact that so much of what is reported on the political scene is the sort of flag burning issues, all the smokescreen issues that are trying to divert you from the bigger issues.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that I think that does come up quite a bit, that we'll talk about like the, you know, Bush having the beer drinkability, like he's the guy you want to drink a beer with. And isn't it ironic considering, you know, the other things that he's done in terms of his issues?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with striking writers from The Daily Show and Colbert Report about American politics without their laughs. And we're doing it on the eve of the nation's first presidential primary in New Hampshire. Laura Kraft and Glenn Eichler join us from the Colbert Report. They're on strike. So is Tim Carvel with The Daily Show with Jon Stewart on strike. Have been for, what, going on 10 weeks now. It's tough. It's tough on the writers. What does it mean for the country? Scott Stantis is with us as well. He's editorial cartoonist for the Birmingham News, also does cartoons for USA Today, and he's been noticing the difference. Let's get a call from Brookline, Massachusetts. Kate, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I love these shows, and I think they do a huge service in media criticism. But I just have to say I'm always unsatisfied with this line that the writers have just given and that Stewart does all the time, which is, a retreat from claims that they have relevance or influence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Stewart does it all the time. Said, "Oh, we're led in by sock puppets," and the writers just did it too. They said, "All we do is provide laughs." But
how do you see it, Kate?
Pardon me?
How do you see it?
Well, I think, you know, Stewart especially. I mean, Colbert is all ironic all the time, but Stewart sometimes has these unironic moments. Most sort of famously that Crossfire moment, but also when he was talking about Chris Matthews' book, and he said that kind of politics is a recipe for sadness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that these guys, who I love, I'm not kidding, writers, I love you guys, I think you don't have very good tools to handle an unironic civic moment. And just for example, I think the Obama campaign might right now represent that kind of uncynical, unironic civic moment. And since I don't think you guys really have great tools for handling that, I think you actually would be hurting him.
So are you happy to see them stay out on the picket line?
I mean, I love entertainment. I miss them. I think they're brilliant. I think they're brilliant media critics. But I just would love to hear the writers deal with both the issue of how they handle things that are unironic. And I'm not talking about 9/11, things that are serious. But I mean things that are unironic. And also just how they deal with, you know, or if they have any response to this sort of notion that they always demur and play low status when we're talking about their influence.
Well, writers, pick it up. I mean, this is the big thing. Right now, out of Iowa, the whole message, the whole interpretation was the voters are yearning to do something really different. They don't want to be cynical. They don't want to be ironic. They want to change. That's the way it got interpreted. Do you smother anything that's not ironic? Is that the impact of what you do?
I'd say a couple things. Number one, Jon Stewart, when he was on Crossfire, was not on The Daily Show. He was a guest on another news show, which is...
He was still Jon Stewart. I mean, it gave us a glimpse into what he thinks beyond the character on The Daily Show.
And then number two, I think that part of the reason that we do act a mirror is that we want to point out to people that we are not a news source. We are being satirical about the news, and that voters and I think citizens have a personal responsibility to be informed about the issues and make their own decisions. And if we poke fun at things, and sometimes I think that, you know, we will say, hey, this is kind of crazy that this is happening, but I don't think at any point we're saying you should turn to us for influence or, you know, it's just that, we are pointing out like, hey, there's a man behind the curtain. You know, because I think so often the way that the machine is put together, it's hard to see that man behind the curtain. It's even hard to read the paper and get past the murders and the fires and the police blog stuff to even get to the politics. Then when you get to the politics, it's so much rhetoric that if we point out like sometimes like the things behind the rhetoric, I still do think it belongs to the citizen, the voting citizen, to draw their own conclusions.
Tim, what if a politician steps out in front of the curtain and tries to get away from that for a minute? I mean, is your effect to keep the sort of irony level in the American bloodstream up so high that the electorate has difficulty responding to that sincerely or not?
I don't believe so. I mean, sort of just to step back a second to sort of the points that she was raising and that Laura was raising. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, when we say that we don't have, as much of an influence as people say we do, that's not to say that we don't have an opinion. I mean, I don't think that we're reflexively ironic and that we reflexively go on the attack. I think that what we're saying is, we're not the decision makers in this country. We're not the people who weren't
elected.
Dear caller Kate, what do you think? Can we walk and chew gum at the same time? Can we have that late night irony fix and, you know, be open to an unironic change moment in American politics, Kate?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, I appreciate everything they just said. And, of course, I agree that they are commentators. You know, they're sort of, and especially they're media critics. So I think most of the time that's what they're doing. And I appreciate that man behind the curtain work that they do. But I don't think they directly addressed this issue of moments where there's a lack of irony, you know, or civic attempts to overcome cynicism. And I said, I'm a very cynical person myself. I love their shows, and I love the work they do. But I do think that there are certain kinds of moments that they don't have the tools to handle very well.
Scott,
and also, I want to say that that answer about the crossfire moment, which I've also heard him give,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't explain a lot of the moments that have happened on the show, including the Chris Matthews moment, which was part of the show.
Yeah, it was. Scott, lean over here from the cartoon world. What about it? Kate says, you know, there may be a civic attempt to overcome cynicism or irony right here.
And obviously, we, you know, on the editorial cartoon side, we get the same complaints. But my point, you know, my point is that, and I think Laura brought it up, it's not their job. I mean, their job, seriously, is to be entertainers, and to first and foremost. Second of all, I don't know how old Laura, Glenn, or Tim are. I mean, I'm 48 years old, and I'm old enough to know that the cynicism is extremely well-founded. That I have, you know, once or twice in my life looked at a politician and said, yeah, this man or this woman really has what I like, and of course it turns out that they're stealing from the milk fund. So I think cynicism is a really important way to approach politics and to address it. Second, you know, should the Colbert Report or Daily Show or Tonight Show stop and have a civic discussion on trade?
All right.
I think that's why God made NPR.
Yeah. Oh, please. We're trying.
A totally non-secular, non-denominational God, but a God.
Yes. Glenn, what about it, though? Here's the, you know, Barack Obama says Americans want to turn a page. Is there a, you know, and Kate interprets that, our listener Kate, as a call to get to the unironic. Is there a way in which, you know, you guys, as comedy writers in your vein, say, no, we're not turning the page. It's going to be, you know, it's still going to be laughs. Laugh, cynical. You know, do you keep us stuck there?
Well, I think it's a really good point that we are media critics. And if Barack Obama's candidacy represents an uncynical moment in politics, there are plenty of media people and organizations ready to tear him down, and we can comment on those and we can point that out.
That's true.
So we don't, it's true that we're, you know, our forte is not dealing with sincerity and goodness, and fortunately we haven't had to at all in our time on the air. So maybe it's good that we're on strike. I don't know.
let's hear just a little about what happens and what doesn't. Here's a skit from the Colbert Report last September. When Colbert had announced that he was running for president and had come under fire from Barack Obama.
You know, Nation, ever since I entered the presidential race, I've discovered that politics can be downright scary. There's backstabbing, attack ads, Chris Dodd's turkey gobbler. But I had no idea it could get so personal. On Monday, Barack Osama bin Laden Obama. I'm sorry. I always mix those two up. Spoke at an MTV MySpace forum in Iowa and got a question from an intelligent young man.
Stephen Colbert has recently said that he's running for president.
I'm worried about it.
I was wondering what impact do you think this will have on the election?
You know, I didn't realize he was from South Carolina. I can't picture Stephen Colbert eating grits. So I've laid out that challenge to him.
A grit off?
A grit off.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed some of that.
Okay, so Obama was having fun, too. There's Colbert putting Barack, Osama, Hussein, Obama, roll a grit off. Maybe they're ready for that now. Let's get a call from Worcester, Massachusetts. And Kirk, hi, Kirk. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, great. The one thing I do want to address here, and I know this isn't something that comedians really have control over, but the whole media cycle issue is really important to consider, mainly because you know, I think that it's a regenerative cycle in which, you know, comedy feeds into serious news and the news feeds into serious comedy. I guess you could think of it that way.
Yeah.
And I think that the best example of this is if we go back to the 2004 elections and how Howard Dean ended up becoming such a victim with his, I guess, primal scream, I guess you could say, and how that really became fodder for the comedy market, and how that filtered into so many different news sources to the effect that it really sort of deep-sixed his entire campaign.
You think if it had just been Walter Cronkite with no comedy echo chamber, that would have gone away and maybe never been aired at all?
Well, I think that the main issue is the soundbite, and I think that the comedy circle has such a better way of dealing with soundbites in terms of being able to take it out of original context. And by turning it into comedy, unfortunately, what it does is it sort of embeds the idea into voters' minds in a way that maybe could take on a negative light, as opposed to thinking about it in the longer context. And here, say, for example, in a news piece or in an article, et cetera.
Yeah, let's ask how the writers see it. Tim, what about it? Can you feel? I mean, surely you've sat around the table marveling at how your joke of last night or the night before somehow now has pushed an issue or a moment. It must appear sometimes that you actually have pushed it higher up in the mainstream media news world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to be difficult. I actually don't know that that is the case. I mean, I honestly don't think that we drive an agenda in any sense. And to the extent, you know, to the question, you know, I feel like I would hope that our show serves as a critique of the soundbite culture as opposed to a you know, a problem with it.
I mean, I think it has many times, no question.
I think back, you know, to cite the Dean Scream, I mean, I think our coverage of that was about the craziness of the coverage, you know, that he was a guy who had, you know, run a long campaign and come up with a lot of positions, and the news media turned him into a guy who screamed once. And then, you know, through repetition made him into a guy who had screamed, you know,
only
45 times a day.
Right, right. Let's get a call from Newmarket, New Hampshire, where it's all going on. Ryan, you're on the air.
run a long campaign and come up with a lot of positions, and he...
Ryan, are you there, my friend?
Screamed once.
Oh, geez. Let's get another from Mason City, Iowa. Listen to me, Ryan. Mark, you're on the air in Mason City, Iowa. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't think the Raiders are giving themselves enough credit. I hope they understand their contribution in presenting the news that doesn't get reported. So many of the young demographic turn to The Daily Show, Colbert, for the news that isn't reported. And by that, I mean, you're not going to see the latest busted White House news conference or the latest Bushism on mainstream media. The healthy cynicism is absent, and what they report is the unreported news.
And in the campaign, has it made a difference, do you think, that they haven't been there? Is there something
Absolutely.
We're missing now?
Absolutely.
What?
The other side, as you said, the non-flag-sucking, the non-mainstream things that really identify the entire campaign.
Might have rounded out our sense of these candidates on the home stretch. Mark, thanks for that. Let's get a call from Mount Holly, Vermont, and Jamie. Hi, Jamie. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
I hate to echo the last caller, but I also wanted to say that I just think that the writers on the show are shortchanging themselves, not only saying that the current Leno show is not as funny. I think they're shortchanging themselves and the contribution that they make. But mainly, getting back to shows like The Daily Show, when you have The Daily Show, it started off as a satirical show, and now they've become something that's much more informative, and it's actually showed in the statistics of college students actually looking to see what happened on C-SPAN that day, that week, with important votes in the Congress, actually making political movements. And
so you've got a journalistic tool, not just entertainment, you say?
I think they've stepped up and seen that there is a void there. The journalists and media, the newspapers aren't doing their jobs, and there's been an absence since the war, and what didn't go on for investigative purposes during the war, and I think they've filled that void. And I think that the writers have done an incredible job of both shining a funny light on it, but also a very serious light, and I think it's a very important thing to happen today. And I think shows like Letterman also have that edge of we're making, it's a half joke, but it's also a half truth.
Mm. So kudos to these writers, whether you like it or not, Laura, Glenn, Tim, people see a lot riding on your shoulders. Give us a sense of what you think is going to happen, first of all, with this strike. Where does this go? People are coming back on the air. Your own guy's back on the air.
Wait, can I just really quickly respond to those last two calls?
Yeah.
Just one quick response,
mm.
which is that we're not reporting on the non-reported news. We get our sources... Are the news is the our source? Our sources. I don't know. I can't write that sentence. Our sources is the news.
But you point out the things that don't get pointed out, though they may be painfully obvious in the mainstream news. And you do it again and again.
We have the same sources as anyone else. We have the papers and the blogs and the cable news networks. And I think that
if we don't pay attention, we lose our jobs. I think that's the difference.
But when the news doesn't say that's absurd, you do. You say, hey,
we do,
that's absurd.
But then we also hopefully point people back and say, like, that's absurd. Watch what's happening. Like, hopefully that's what we're doing.
It is a show you can make in your own home with a TiVo and an Nexus account or even just, you know, just
even
the
just
internet.
Papers. Go online and get the New York Times.
Hey, we like it better when you do it. Tim, where do you think this ends up, this strike?
The strike, I
victorious.
I think it ends with us victorious. I mean, I hope that it ends you know, soon and with us getting what we deserve from the companies. I mean, essentially right now they walked out of the negotiating room and are refusing to come back. They literally are not coming to the table. We're ready to make a deal, and it's my hope that fairly soon they'll realize that writers are necessary, and that, you know, that the six major media conglomerates that are refusing to deal with us will we'll sit down and actually talk seriously about a deal.
Scott Stantis, last word goes to you from Birmingham. What happens if we don't get him back? On to the White House without him. Can you imagine it?
Well, we're going to have a lot of Clinton sex jokes from Jay Leno. That's my prediction.
Oh, boy. That could get old. That could get old. Scott, Scott Stantis with the Birmingham News. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Laura Kraft and Glenn Eichler with the Colbert Report. Good luck to you. We hope you're back soon, and thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And Tim Carvel with The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Tim, thanks for joining us. Hope you're off that picket line soon.
That makes two of us.
Listeners, great to have you as always. We'll be in New Hampshire tomorrow. I'll be there with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.